Today's Tuesday, June 27th.
Today's news broadcast is going to be epic!
Because there's nothing pathetic about calling your own product epic even before it happens.
AMD's launching Epic. The 7000 series CPUs have launched. And so there's a really great article at Ann & Tech that is going to break down everything, you know. Look, it's four different, up to eight core, I guess, pieces of silicon on this single carrier, on this single EPYC carrier. And, I totally did not unironically use the EPYC capability there. But the big news here is around the pricing. These CPUs top out at like 3-ish gigahertz, I guess. But that's not really anything unusual that we've seen in the enterprise. Intel has certainly shied away from 4 gigahertz parts owing to power consumption and things like that. Some of the CPU parts are expected to be much faster in the Threadripper version, that's sort of the desktop version. Intel has done the same with their, Xeon workstation parts. But the pricing here is insanely disruptive. If you compare this for Intel's parts, the pricing is going to be completely nuts. Probably people inside Intel may be committing Harry Carey right about now. This is really exciting if you want to do single socket servers. I mean, we're talking about 64 PCI Express lanes per CPU in a dual socket server, so 128 PCI Express lanes and up to 128 PCI Express lanes in a single socket server as well. So if the name of the game is I/O, that plus your 8 memory channels really should be able to keep this thing fed. So, yeah.
Yeah, if you could run 4x16 video cards. If you wanted to. I don't know why you would, but you could.
Well, it's all going to be all about machine learning and offloading computation and things like that. I mean, if you've got a $6,000 quote-unquote graphics card, then yeah, you might be starting to eat into that 16 lanes of PCI Express bandwidth or an off-board crypto accelerator card or anything like that. That's kind of been a problem in the enterprise, especially when you're talking about 40 gigabit Ethernet adapters. So things are looking to be really disruptive if AMD can get to the server market, like the chassis actually in the data center, and they hit it just right in terms of like upgrade cycles, because, honestly, the only reason the first gen Socket 2011 servers were thrown out recently and flooded eBay is because of buggy virtualization and poor power efficiency. But these things are more power efficient than Xeon, which, I mean, how crazy is that? It's like, AMDs have the reputation of being the space heaters and setting everything on fire and having to dump 300 watts into the CPUs. And now that the shoe's kind of on the other foot, Intel is the one that has the high wattage CPUs.
Yeah, AMD seems to have definitely fixed all of their problems that they're traditionally known for and give it a really good value proposition here. And if it gets adopted widely, that's going to be really, really bad for Intel shareholders.
But really good for people that are buying these things, because it's finally not going to be highway robbery for the price of CPUs. I mean, some of these CPUs are well over $4,000, and it looks like AMD is poised to disrupt that market. So that's super, super exciting. I can't wait. I can't wait to get my hands on Threadripper, honestly. Threadripper is the desktop, higher wattage, higher clocks. Higher clocks is the important thing. Version of these CPUs, I cannot wait.
I really hope that something doesn't turn out to be wrong with, it's like too good to be true, because imagine how crippling that would be to AMD and just everybody, because Intel would it would galvanize their power to a level that we'd never escape their tyranny ever again.
Oh, that would be, yeah. Let's, AMD, let's hope they're able to pull a rabbit out of a hat here, because I don't want to think about that world knowing that the price per unit compute really hasn't moved at all in the last 5 years, so. I don't know. Also, in a follow-up for last week, we talked about how Take-Two, the parent company of Rockstar, had issued a cease and desist to an offline mod called Open 4 that was for GTA 4 and 5. Well, there's an update, and Rockstar's saying, well, we talked to Take-Two about it, and they're actually okay with single-player mods. We're not really sure what's going on. Maybe there's some confusion. They're working with the developers of Open 4 to do whatever's necessary to get it back online, and or maybe add some patches to Open 4 to make it harder for other people to make that work with the online version.
Now, as we noted last week, GTA 5 is rife with hacking anyway. I mean, stopping Open 4 would not stop that at all. It's also important to note that Rockstar didn't get involved until the Steam page for GTA 5 hit overwhelmingly negative because of, and there was, you know, several boycotts. Although I saw a lot of people on my Steam list playing it. Scabs.
We see what you did there. It's like, no, this is not really good. Well, the first story of the day is that the German police have raided 36 homes over social media?
Hateful postings. But when you drill down, the vast majority of these 36 people were political extremists. And I don't know if that really constitutes hate.
Huh. I mean, well, it's Germany, so...
Well, I don't know. I mean, does hating the other political party, wouldn't everybody in government be... you know, under that umbrella?
I don't know. I followed some interesting Twitter threads where, you know, here in America, where it's like we got the whole healthcare thing going on, and it's like, if you change healthcare, you are literally murdering other people. And while I don't agree with, I mean, honestly, like, I hate dysfunction, and I think we should all point and laugh at dysfunction and idiocy, but the guy was just saying, well, is it really fair to call the people to support this murderers? Because that doesn't seem like that's entirely accurate. It seems a bit hyperbolic.
It's this whole movement that you must adapt to make me comfortable. And it's disgusting. It's taking hold, though. My favorite quote in this article, our free society must not allow a climate of fear. Our free society. So... if you're not free to create a climate of fear, it's not free, right?
So if somebody is making terroristic threats or criminal threats, or it's like, I will come to your house and kill you type threats, there are existing laws to deal with that in Germany. Well, yeah. I guarantee you that right. There are. So does this fall under that purview? This article is completely useless without actually knowing what the quotation marks are, because kind of a theme of our overall news program is that an imagined fear is many, many, many times worse than an actual fear. You know, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And so when you see an article like this, and it's like, oh, this speech was really bad, you should always say, oh, yeah, it's really bad. Well, what was it? What was the speech? Because it's probably much less bad than what you're imagining.
We can't print that. That's hate speech.
You see how that becomes a cycle? You see why that should not be tolerated?
But the fact that they do tell you that it was mostly political speech, that shows you the real... reason they want this, you know. It's, and it was right-wing political speech, and right now the left is firmly in control in Germany, and part of the big political argument of the day is the refugee crisis. So I'm sure most of those posts were about, hey, we don't agree with the refugee crisis, so shut it down.
We might have been more disinclined to not report on the article if the news had been set up as people making terroristic threat on social media were arrested, but that's not what is happening here from what we understand. It would be neat to be able to see actually what was said, but okay, whatever. Oh, going to slightly nearby place, a cyber attack on Parliament leaves MPs unable to access their email. But when you dive into the details, it sounds like it's just not exactly that.
Well, it was just they were trying to get weak passwords. Because if you think about the government, you think about weak passwords. It seems like, in our experience, the more power and the more money a person has, the more they will refuse to adopt a good password. And they were just doing it on it's almost like a DDoS type situation. It's like, we're going to hit you over and over, and there's nothing that you've done to protect that, again, because it's government. And we're going to keep trying these passwords. So I think that they were like, oh, God, it's happening. Turn it off.
Yeah, yeah. So... I mean, you know, this could have been a script kiddie. Like, they could have even not known that it was, you know, the MPs that they were targeting with this. So I can't imagine that this, you know, anybody, you know, if you just have a Twitter account that has more than like 1,000 followers, it is subject to attacks like this. So, I mean, come on. Be good. WikiLeaks, kind of a follow-up. There's the new story this week is that the CIA has malware for hacking air-gapped networks via USB thumb drives. But sort of buried in this article is the more interesting thing. Apparently, the CIA has an undisclosed vulnerability in link files. LNK, this is shortcuts on Windows, that will let you run arbitrary executable code. That's one of the infection vectors for this on USB thumb drives. So you have a thumb drive that's used on a machine that's online, that infects it, and then You use that machine, that thumb drive, on another machine that's not on the internet. It's like, well, it gets infected. That's how we exfiltrate data.
It's called Brutal Kangaroo, which if that doesn't have a sex act Urban Dictionary entry, it's ripe for one. Somebody come up with that.
Oh, yeah. I like the helpful UI here. It's like, hello, Mr. Secret Agent Man. I'm here to help you craft your XML configuration file.
Yeah. So the whole idea, like you say, is one computer sort of births all the vulnerabilities for the other computer. So you count on people going to that computer with thumb drives and then going back to their desk. And it just keeps replicating itself.
There's also some antivirus software apparently also detects it. And so I'm not sure if that means that the antivirus companies have seen that in the wild before, or if it's just because most antivirus software is definition based, meaning that unless the software has explicitly been seen by the antivirus company, it will not be flagged as malicious. Most people don't realize that. It's not like your immune system where it's like, oh, this is a foreign invader. We need to fend it off. It's more like, have we seen this before? Yes or no? It's like, no, we haven't seen it before. Even though it's a slightly, slightly tweaked version of something we have seen before, it's like, ah, it's probably fine. Let it on through. That's modern antivirus,
I think,
for the most part.
I think Microsoft also had a fix for it already. So not a huge story, but it is interesting to see what they'll do when they can't get to you with the internet.
Now, something that we've covered in the past, so this is also kind of a follow-up, but it's new information, is sometimes we've had stories from China where it's like China is like, oh, we don't want to cover AlphaGo, or we don't want to do this, or we don't want to do that. And it's like, well, the sources for that sometimes are kind of sketchy. Well, here's a very good source for how the Chinese government fabricates social media posts for strategic distraction and not for engaged argument.
Yeah, this is a paper from Harvard. And this has been theorized for a long time that they sort of, you know, astroturfing, that China has... They claim up to 2 million people whose job it is to go into the online stuff and sort of argue. When you go into a comment section and you're like, wow, how could that person possibly have that opinion? Well, maybe because they're getting paid for it. So they sort of they wrote this paper and they sort of came up with ways to identify when this was happening. And what they discovered was that there is no good argument in most cases against, like, somebody will put up a really good argument like, hey, this is wrong. China should not be doing this. And they never really argue with that. But rather, it's all about misdirection. And something like 400 and some million posts in a year is all about just like, hey, ignore this post. Let me tell you about something unrelated and why China is great.
Yeah. So this is, you know, we do that in America too. But the people right in America that have been employed to do that are morons. So it's not quite as effective here.
Now we did, I don't know if we ever covered this on the news. This might have predated Level 1 News. But there was a story a couple of years ago about the Air Force. And they have a program that does this.
I think that was one of our first stories.
Was it?
Yeah, I think so. Wow.
So yeah, I mean, our government definitely does this too. Right? If you're on your like moral high ground, like, oh, the stupid Chinese. No. We do it too.
Us and the viewers at home, we are part of a dying breed that actually reads and cares about the news and what is happening in the world around us. We just want to know. We just want to understand. It's not anything that you should internalize to the point that you're like, oh my God, everything is really bleak and depressing and whatever. It's like, no, just be aware of it.
Yeah, yeah. George Carlin, that was his whole, that's one of my favorite outlooks on life, is like, yes, it's all on fire and it's terrible and it's awful. Just be a spectator.
Yeah.
Don't contribute to it. Don't involve yourself in it. Just enjoy the show. That's all you can do.
And I would add to that, it's like you have to point out the idiocy everywhere you can, because like we would never have crawled out of the pond if we lacked the ability to point at the ignorant and the ignorant that are not willing to be not ignorant anymore to point and laugh. I mean, there is a societal use of that. So
until Germany makes it illegal.
I violated someone's safe space and I can't point out the idiocy exactly of their position.
It's coming to it.
Yeah. Oh, Chinese media told to shut down talk that makes the country look bad. So this has sources and this is from CNET. And so this is just sort of a general order to a streaming service. It's a social streaming service. I guess it's kind of like Twitch.
There were three different things.
Well, it was like Weibo, I think, was the main one though. Is that the one where like anybody can stream to it, but you have to apply to a broadcaster's license or something? Yeah. But it's, you know, a Twitch-like streaming service. And so this was like an announcement that was sent to all their streamers. It was like, hey, by the way, don't say anything bad about China.
Now we have covered before, China has already restricted what you can wear when you're streaming, and you can't eat bananas.
No bananas. Bananas are bad. Bananas are bad, okay? Now, right to repair is also another thing that we've talked about a lot.
Let's take a moment and recognize, I don't know if this has ever happened before, this is a good news story in the first part of the news. Usually we do like the scary government stuff in the first part. Like we do like breaking hardware news and then scary government stuff. But this is a good story in the scary government stuff section. I don't know if it's ever happened before.
Yeah. This actually, it was, well, there are a couple. Aw, what is this?
They've got the newest Windows update for us.
We'll just continue on. The U.S. government wants to permanently legalize the right to repair. Okay, the title on this is a little misleading. It's actually the U.S. Government Copyright Office. And they've simply said, hey, we've had a lot of exceptions to this for the right to repair. Maybe we should go ahead and codify that in law. But if you read it, they were actually very careful to exclude tinkering. So things like mod chips and just being able to tinker with your phone. It's like, I want to jailbreak this for the purpose of running my own software on an iPhone. They explicitly want to disallow that or at least exclude it from legislation. But if you need to circumvent the software in order to circumvent a malfunctioning copy protection device, not remove it altogether, but just, you know, it's malfunctioning. I need to do something with it. So the right to repair here is really not ideal, but it is good that there are forces within the government that are acknowledging that, hey, this right to repair thing might not actually be a terrible idea.
But before you say, oh, our government champions, they're finally doing something for us, what really brought this on was laziness, bureaucratic laziness, because they were like, listen, we're doing way too much paperwork with all these exceptions. It's wasting our time. Just go ahead and let them do it, because they pretty much have to allow those exceptions whenever they are valid, and they're almost always valid because you're trying to fix something that you bought.
Things like unlocking a phone.
Yeah. So they're saying, we can't be bothered with this. Just let them have their freedom back.
I'm sure it won't be long before companies start behaving badly in response to this and, you know, trying to lobby. It's like, oh, no, we don't need a right to repair. We need to just glue everything together and solder everything together.
So you're saying that they would rather destroy it than let you have something that they don't approve of?
Yes, exactly. I think so. Oh, look at that. Comcast has been accused of cutting competitors' wires to put their competitor out of business. This is a really small ISP. They only had 229 customers.
Yeah, a small ISP and 229 customers. Think about that. Like, they probably were just barely existing. Like, you know, one or two employees, maybe five, and not making a ton of money, and that's not a threat to Comcast at all. So Comcast comes into town, and this guy's like, oh, God, I know about Comcast. So he took the time to go and mark all of his underground cables. He put down the orange paint, put the flags, mark the cables. Hey, this is here. Be careful when you install your cables. Even sent them a map, emailed them a detailed map. Hey, here's where all my cables are. And they systematically went about cutting every one of those cables.
It's like, hey, guy, thanks for the map. We'll use it to cut your cables. I mean, oh, wait, you know, I don't know. So Comcast is saying this was actually contractors and not Comcast. And so this is, you know, there's an aspect of small town politics here. But he's suing for damages, $1 million. He seemed to intimate that he offered to sell to Comcast. Comcast was willing to buy, but they could not agree on money.
Yeah. Well, I think they came to him first. And he was like, yeah, it's worth this. And they're like, no, it's worth a quarter of that.
It's worth what we say it's worth.
Now, right now, it's worth zero because he literally could not. I mean, you think about it. How long can you go without internet?
Yeah.
Even if you love your ISP, which who loves their ISP? His customers had no internet for, you know, weeks at a time. He had to rebuild the infrastructure and they all just left. He's got zero customers at this point.
Well, clearly, you know, Comcast has done no wrong, and they're just such a large company that they would not care, and that this is obviously below their radar, which is, you know, the argument that we've gotten from net neutrality. It's like, we don't need net neutrality. Companies will police themselves. It's not, you know, the FCC is not the appropriate place to regulate that. It's totally fine. And it didn't really take very long before the cable lobby said, yeah, net neutrality, this is really good. So states were investigating claims of ISPs like, oh, you're going to get this speed and it's going to be this available and this is going to be really great. And then the cable lobby said, well, because what's happening with net neutrality, you should stop investigating us for what speeds we advertise because it doesn't matter because net neutrality.
Now, this is the one part of net neutrality that was allowed to stand after the recent stripping of all the net neutrality. So, and this has to do with up to the up to language of advertised speeds. Now, we've actually covered the catalyst for this. This was the New York story.
Yes.
The New York Attorney General looked at Comcast and Time Warner and was like, hey, you advertise this and we measured it and you give nothing close to that. So there was another state too, maybe Washington.
It's like, we offer up to 300 megabit, and the New York Attorney General is like, the advertisement should be, you will never get up to 300 megabit.
So these individual states are going after them and suing them and saying, this is false advertising, you can't do this. Well, they're saying, hey, FCC, protect us. Use net neutrality to protect us. Because according to that law, we can use this up to language and get away with whatever we want.
I was trying to look at some of the actual arguments, some of it mentioned in the article and some of it that I've seen before. And from like a technical standpoint, sometimes the language comes down to, okay, because you can get 300 megabit from the modem, from your cable modem to your individual device, that's up to 300 megabit. And within the language of the stuff that the FCC can force us to be compliant with. And so it's like, our network can theoretically deliver 300 megabit, but we've only got, 1.5 megabit of upstream actual internet connection on our network. So you're never going to get 300 megabit. But our network could deliver 300 megabit if you were copying off of, another Comcast customer or another Time Warner customer. And so they're saying, hey, that's what that means, the up to 300 megabit. It means your connection to us is 300 megabit, but we make no guarantees about our connection to the internet.
Yeah. So, and it's, if this stands, it is a perfect example of what the FCC exists to do, which is to protect the status quo, just like every other part of the government. And sadly, it's got a shot.
I was kind of shocked to learn that when I went to Taipei, my face was scanned by DHS, apparently, because reasons. So yeah, all international travel, DHS is starting to scan Americans' faces before they get on international flights. Delta and another airline had touted this as like an easy way to check in for international flights, but it turns out it is a compulsory program from the Department of Homeland Security, and they neglected to tell anyone.
They've been doing it for a long time with foreign nationals, so if you're not American, your face has been scanned for years now. And, this goes back, we covered, Dubai?
Dubai, yeah.
Last week, they're doing the same thing. If you go through the Dubai airport, oh, it's super convenient, just biometrics.
Turns out.
Yeah, so we're doing this now. Now, the scary part about this is they've sort of like, yeah, we do all this. Here's all the details. Oh, and also it goes into our risk management database. And it's like, what's your risk management database? We don't disclose that. Sorry. Yeah, so your face is going into being compared with who knows what to find out if you match with who knows what whenever you do this.
Now, the other thing that was disclosed in the article was that about 4%, apparently the technology is really not that great, and that it can be up to 4% inaccurate.
Yeah, and more than 6 years, I think, between photos, because you age, will rapidly increase. And a passport lasts for, 10 years?
Yeah.
So if you're at the end of your passport, it's way more likely that it won't recognize you. And can you imagine what the process is going to be when it doesn't recognize you and you have to go through the manual process?
It'll be less work to just shoot those people. We've seen that with domestic law enforcement. It's just less work to just shoot somebody in that scenario. It's like, there's a mentally handicapped person that is not on their meds and we need police assistance to take them to the hospital or whatever. It's just faster to shoot them. It's fine.
Or just put them on a CIA plane.
Send them to Gitmo.
Take them to wherever.
Well, Mexico's certainly learning from us. The Mexican journalists and lawyers have been targeted with government phone spyware. So the Mexican government has all these people that are critical of us. Perhaps if we target their technology with backdoors and things, we can, stop that problem from within, because that's what technology should be used for.
Yeah, this was, they looked at a group of people who were attacked by, so it's the old SMS message with a link in it. If you click the link, that's a backdoor. And overwhelmingly, the people that got those links and were infected with these things were, looking into government violations.
Corruption.
Or, they were like environmental activists, things like that.
Are you connected with the drug trade? It's like,
No, I think the government's connected with the drug trade. These are the guys trying to put a stop to that kind of thing. So, Mexico's government is pretty well known for its corruption And that's another tool they're using.
So you're saying government's building a dossier on all of their citizens, regardless of criminal history or intent or, you know, affiliation, is probably a bad idea because it'll be abused, yeah, and eventually the database will leak in one way or another.
Well, I mean, this is very, if you're a government needs full power, you know, like on that side of the fence, you have to have had an awakening previously, because everything Obama did is now available to Trump. So if you hate Trump, now think about that, you know, in terms of Mexico or a place like that. You know, a previous government who was all about the people could have built that database, and then something goes wrong and somebody else gets in power and they've got the database. That's what you have to worry about.
So that's kind of like what happened here, with 198 million Americans have been hit by the largest ever voter records leak. And it's like, voter records, isn't that public information anyway? Ah, young Padawan, what has happened here is that commercial interests have enriched that database. That's the term that they use, with lots of other information about you, where you live, you know, how wealthy is that neighborhood, what's your income, social security number, your, I think it was the last four of your social security number and the last four of your credit card was specifically in this database. They get all this information, even though you're a voter, you can compile all of this wonderful, wonderful information. Yeah, now it's on the internet. Everybody has it.
I used to work at a place that they would buy these records. And this was like 2005, so I'm sure they're way better now. But they paid a lot of money, and there were a lot of columns in that database, I'll tell you. And I used to have to run queries and, you know, target, like, hey, who are we going to call tonight? We want this and this and this and this and this. Very detailed lists. Now, the real terrifying thing here is they talk about Obama's presidency was kind of the first to really, really, really look at these things. So they started data mining all of these things. I mean, these have existed for a long time, but Obama's administration started data mining this and literally changing their tactics based on what they found from this data. So think about that. As of Obama, they were modifying. They weren't like, this is our platform, this is what we believe in. That would change from week to week based on the data. It's like, what do they want to hear? We'll tell them whatever they want to hear. Just let me know what they want to hear. And it's very effective.
Yes. Yes. I'm sure that a lot of people can recall specific anecdotal personal experiences in America that would totally back that up. But the crazy thing here is that, you know, those 2000, like the 2005 and before versions of that database might have had, you know, 50 or 100 points of data on a single individual. But with the data that is available on an individual commercially, it's now more like 1,000 points of data or 10,000 points of data. And that database is on the internet for everybody. Like, that's the news story here, not that that database exists. Because you can still buy that database. It's like, oh, we got it off the internet. You know, even if they erased it entirely from the internet tomorrow, guess what? You can still buy it.
And we didn't mention, this is another Amazon AWS that with no password. That just keeps happening. It's like, wow, did you not read the news? Put a password on that thing. Somebody found it, and I was like, oh, here it is. Download it.
Yeah, this is. But I mean, this is the types of organizations that are working with voter registration data. These types of analytics are so easy and so accessible that people with no formal training or really no understanding of computer security at all have access to these records. Not because Russia and not because, you know, super hackers are penetrating the most private networks ever. It is because this data is so easily available commercially that it might as well have no security anyway. And that's really the news.
Twitter knows if you buy milk. That's what we've learned. I think we've mentioned that before.
Yeah, mining the credit card data.
If you use Twitter, Twitter knows if you buy milk. And they tell us.
Well, some other good news is the FCC has proposed fining a robocaller in Florida $120 million.
I got so many of these calls. This was the call that was like, you've stayed at one of our resorts recently, and we want to give you a prize. Well, it turns out the prize was being connected to an overseas travel agency to try to sell you crap. And, oh, man, I got so many of these. And I didn't really notice when they stopped, but they stopped right around the time they caught this guy.
$120 million fine for 96 million calls. Yeah. If he charged more than a dollar a call, he's probably okay.
Well, I doubt. I mean, what do you think? You get like probably like 0.5%. of your people fall for that?
I don't know. If it's commission-based, then he's definitely not going to have the money. But if it's call-based, then he might be okay.
I don't know. I seriously doubt it's a dollar call.
Amazon, how we always like talking about Amazon and the Amazon Web Services and how it's taking over the world, but this is kind of interesting. Walmart is taking an anti-Amazon stance to the point that it suggests that they don't really understand how Amazon operates as a business. So what has happened here is people that supply things to Walmart as part of their supply chain, you know, they work with dozens, hundreds of companies just for their core supply chain stuff. There's an analytics company that supplies analytics software to Amazon, and to deal with scalability, that company uses Amazon Web Services, AWS. And this is all done, like, you know, honestly, Walmart doesn't really have anything to do with that. It's just how this Walmart client does stuff. And so Walmart has told this company, we're not going to use your product anymore unless you switch to Microsoft Azure away from Amazon Web Services, because Amazon is a competitor of ours.
Now, Walmart has an insane amount of power with these the people that sell them their products and the people that do business with them. Because if you sell barbecue sauce, getting into Walmart is like the golden ticket, because there's so many Walmarts around the world. If they sell your product, you're going to sell a crap ton of that product. And they will often strong arm these people. It's like, oh, your product is a dollar? I'm sorry, I must have misheard you. Your product is 90 cents. And you have to be like, okay, if I'm going to sell 100 million bottles a year, I guess it could be 90 cents. And this is just more of that. They're like, they have so much power and so much global coverage that they can just tell you how it's going to be.
So this is now extending to, like, their business operations. And, you know, I think that's, like, one step removed from where Walmart should really have any say-so, because, you know, is Azure less expensive to operate than AWS for a particular program? Will it drive the cost of operation up for these companies? You know, what's the long-term goal here that Walmart has, other than to just try to undermine Amazon because Amazon is competing with Walmart?
That's exactly what their goal is. I don't know if they're really trying to hide that. They do not like this Whole Foods purchase, and they are striking back any way that they can, and this is pretty much all they've got.
Kind of a follow-up in the middle of the story. We talked about Uber. I think we only had 1 week where we haven't talked about Uber. Well, yeah. The CEO has gone from vacation to, you know, laid off, I guess, or has resigned.
No, he's gone. He's gone.
So
he had the option not to leave, but it was just such a shitstorm that everybody was like, you know, you got to go. So he's gone from Uber. I'm sure he's still got a lot of shares.
And I'm sure that'll solve all of Uber's problems.
Yeah, he has a reason to not see the company fall apart. A really, really, he's probably got several million reasons. Yeah. So, yeah, he decided to walk away and not let it all burn down. It will be interesting, though. I mean, it does seem like the sexual harassment stuff was like the big, I mean, they did a lot of terrible things. And he seemed to promote like almost a gladiator sort of experience at Uber. It's like, you will just drive your enemies before us and hear the lamentations of their women, which is sexual harassment. So I don't know. You think they'll bring in a woman.
Oh, you think?
They should get Marissa Meyer.
I shouldn't laugh at that. That's probably, I mean,
she did such a good job.
That wouldn't be a terrible idea, honestly. I mean, it might not be. Moving right along, Honda has shut down a factory after finding WannaCry on its networks.
Yeah, this is 3 weeks later.
So this was a factory that was north of Tokyo, I think, and I think it's isolated. There, it seemed to be that they were doing it kind of as a precautionary measure. But yeah, the NSA derived ransomware is in the wild and affecting companies like Honda, among, you know. You know, your corner grocery store and anybody else with an unpatched system.
They didn't patch their systems, but even beyond that, it seems like they were blocking the kill switch domain for whatever reason. Why? How does that get in your firewall? So they were literally doing, they were trying to get WannaCry, and it worked.
Yeah, they definitely get. Well, I think the police sees the poor security researcher that was operating the sinkhole domain. I think they seized all of his stuff to try to figure out if he was a criminal or not.
That's incredible. It's like, we could never really catch. It's sort of like the Batman, you know. It's like, we can't do anything about the real criminals, but we got to get this one that's in the news. We got to let's do something. Let's try to do something.
I guess in Europe, you guys are used to having surveillance cameras everywhere. It's kind of a new thing in America, but we're gonna put our highway surveillance cameras to use catching people that are uninsured.
Now, of course, we have the red light cameras. The red light cameras have proven to be horrible, horrible things. They cause more accidents than they prevent. And they just generate revenue, which is exactly what these things will do. And it's important to note, just like with red light cameras, the city or the state or whoever doesn't put these up, they contract with a private company who takes 50% of all the revenue. So basically, you have this private company that wants to create citations and take their piece of that citation. And it doesn't, like, who does it help? It just generates money for a corrupt government.
Most of the time, this, you know, the people that this affects are so poor that the fine that this generates will actually put them in a really, really bad spot. Like, they might lose their car and then lose their license and then can't drive, and then they can't get a job because they can't drive and they can't get their car. And it's really, like, I'm not saying that people should be able to drive without insurance. That's a really terrible situation. But the system that creates these problems is not solved by fining the motorists that don't have insurance. The problem should be fixed at the root cause, not the symptom.
It's also important to note that this is for everybody, not just Rhode Island residents. So now it requires that there be some sort of a countrywide database of insurance lapses. The insurance companies themselves have come out against this, even though you'd think, well, it's going to sell more policies, right? They'd be for it. But no, it's going to be a huge problem for them to try to keep all this information up to date and answer all these queries. It's like, does this person have insurance? Does this person have insurance? Are you sure? It's also good to note that we've had something similar to this for repossessing vehicles, where repo companies have hired taxis to put cameras on the sides of the taxis. And as they drive through like Walmart's parking lot, they're scanning all the license plates and trying to find repos. So while you're shopping, you think, oh, they won't get me while I'm shopping, and then I'll put it in the garage when I get home. And then you come out and you don't have a car.
Man, can you imagine the repo man if they're able to deploy? You know, it's like imagine a repo man that in his trunk has a fleet of like 700 micro drones, and he just rolls up to a town, opens his trunk, and they just swarm out of there to canvas the whole town.
Or he contracts with the insurance monitoring company and just uses their database. Hey, this car doesn't have, what do you think the Venn diagram looks like of doesn't have insurance and car needs to be repossessed? So I think that's going to be a real close correlation.
One other thing that we get a lot of questions about is cryptocurrency, cryptocurrency value and, you know, mining and things like that. And honestly, right now with all of the new stuff coming out, you know, we've got Ryzen, we've got X299, we've got Threadripper on the desktop coming really soon. Now is really a terrible time to build a computer. There's a GPU shortage because of mining Ethereum, which is a type of cryptocurrency. There's DRAM shortages. There are flash shortages. And so all of these prices for these types of devices are artificially expensive. And we've experienced that somewhat too. I mean, even just vendors, you know, are reluctant to send hardware because they're like, oh my God, nobody's buying anything. We don't really want to demo anything. So it's sort of an interesting situation because it's like, I want to build a computer. I want to do whatever. But we thought we would mention this article from the New York Times, which, you know, signals that this is kind of mainstream. The normies are catching on, I guess. That Ether is the digital currency of the moment. And so there's a graph here of the value, and it talks a little bit about Ethereum and cryptocurrency for novices, I guess.
Now, Ethereum is different than Bitcoin, so it has a few advantages. One of the advantages is it's easier to make API-type stuff for it, so you can build things that use it a lot easier than you can Bitcoin. But it also has this distributed computing component where they have something they call gas. And you could use the Ethereum network, in theory, to run programs. They call them dApps or dApps or something like that.
Distributed apps.
So, and then in turn, you would pay the people to run those apps with their graphics cards and that type of thing. It's an interesting technology. And it seems like it's better than Bitcoin in every way. So a lot of people are like, do I get in now? Now, here's something you need to think about, though, if you're thinking, hey, I'm going to go out and I'm going to pay those prices and get those video cards. I'm going to start mining. We are right up against a difficulty doubling.
Yes.
So whatever you hear these people, they're making all this money now, it's going to be half that in a very short amount of time. And the more people like you that run in and get started, the quicker that's going to happen.
Well, Ryan Shrout from PC Perspective has a really good article on what happened to the market last time this happened. Last time this happened was when Bitcoin was topping, I think, $1,200. And so the fever this time is even more insane. The shortage is even more extreme than it was last time. And so one of two things will happen. One, the difficulty will go up. and then we have a new generation of hardware coming out. And so as soon as the new generation of hardware comes out, everybody will be buying that generation of hardware if it's more efficient per dollar than the existing hardware. And then all of the existing hardware, the used hardware, will flood the market. And so we'll see a depression in prices. You'll be able to pick up a used 580, you know, an RX 580 for $125 or $100 or something like that. Or the compute per unit will stay basically the same, and there will continue to be shortages because nobody really wants to do fabrication and assembly of, you know, yesterday's news on graphics cards. Nobody really wants to add capacity to it. And then the market will crash, and then it's, you know, it's not going to be worth as much. And then eventually you're going to get used cards one way or the other. It's just sooner or later. So it's a really, really interesting situation. But, you know, right now I think the payback time on an RX 580, if you buy one for the outrageous, you know, $350 or so, is like a month to a month and a half, something like that. Which is a really long time. It's like, will the prices for this be that stable for that long? And the answer is probably not.
It's also important to note that with Bitcoin, the difficulty went beyond video cards.
Really
not,
quickly.
Not long ago, maybe a couple years ago, I guess. With Ethereum, it's built against that. So these ASIC miners that the Bitcoin people use, Ethereum is designed not to work with that as well. So that's why the cards are important. But who knows if someday somebody figures out something that will get around the video card, and then they will become pretty much worthless.
Now, NVIDIA even wants in on this because they're starting to produce their own miner-specific cards. So, you know, there is software now optimized for like 1070s. So like 1060s and 1070s, their prices have been going up because everybody's been buying the, you know, more unit of compute RX cards, which should tell you something. I mean, it's just the RX cards are really, really good value for what they are. I don't know. Other news, the NSA opened up a GitHub account this week. Huh. So they've open sourced 32 projects that totally will not infect your computer with horrible malware if you download them from GitHub.
I mean, I don't know what are they thinking with this? It's a PR move, clearly, but what's it supposed to convey?
I don't know. I remember a time when Linux was new and we had the National Institute of Standards and Technology. Brilliant group of guys, really smart engineers, working hand in hand with the NSA to make everyone's life better, to make everything more secure, to really improve computing. And it's like, yes, our enemies may adopt our secure stuff that we're working with the NIST, and they may adopt, you know, this, that, and the other, but that is okay because, you know, we will catch criminals and terrorists another way. We need our technology to be secure. And so they worked on things like Elliptic Curve, which turned out to be compromised, whoops, and improving standards, and SE Linux. SE Linux is made from NSA-derived technologies. So the NSA is capable of contributing in a positive way to our technology landscape. It will take a long time for the NSA to build up goodwill and trust with these types of projects if they're not a Trojan horse.
They're definitely a Trojan horse.
And if they are a Trojan horse, everybody's going to be like, oh my God, fool me once. Just why is this? This is just crazy.
They're going to say that for 3 months and then they're going to forget about it like everything else.
In a totally not even related to that story, apparently a whole bunch of Windows source that's not supposed to be on the internet has made it to the internet. Totally not related to the NSA. No, I'm kidding. Mostly kidding. So this actually is not as bad as it sounds. There's a lot of places that are reporting, oh my God, the entire Windows source code is online. Not really. This is the source code that is typically shared with hardware vendors, so it's not the full Windows source. It's really just the entire driver and hardware stack, and it's typically shared with big companies, I think like HP and Dell, people that make their own hardware, and they make a lot of it in volume. And so this has somehow made its way to the internet. But this is source code for drivers. This is a bunch of stuff that's normally not public information, but it is probably stuff that was already in the hands of like the NSA, the CIA, and probably Russia and Saudi Arabia, and, you know, their intelligence agencies and MI6 and, you know, all those people probably already had this.
And they did take down some of the more sensitive parts of it after someone pointed out, like, hey, this could be dangerous. So this database, I can't remember what the name of them were. Like
Beta Archive?
Yeah, Beta Archive. They took down the more sensitive stuff. But as long as it was out there once, it's still out there.
Yeah, it's still on the internet for somewhere. It's totally fine. So this may lead to some security issues, but I think that the severity of this has been overstated. It is severe, but I don't think it is anywhere near as severe as like the vulnerabilities in SMB or anything like that. But time will tell.
It might just force Microsoft to look for those vulnerabilities and get ahead of some of those CIA. You know, it's like, oh, we've been sitting on this for 3 months. So now they know.
Well, we could all immediately go to Windows S because we reported last week that Microsoft was like, hey, there's no known malware for Windows S. That's completely fine, right? Yeah, everybody, Windows S, woohoo!
You got to wonder, like, what were they thinking?
What were they thinking?
How could they not have known that, of course, immediately ZDNet would hire a security researcher and he would find a way in, yeah. And it didn't take him very long at all.
This story is amazing. So they ported the ransomware, the WannaCry ransomware, to Windows S. So, yeah, the first piece of malware for Windows S comes from a security researcher that was hired by ZDNet or reporting to ZDNet or something like that. So this is amazing. And as I expected, the protections in Windows S was nothing more than a thin veneer. This is the type of problem that both Microsoft and OS X has. And OS X's problem, or Mac OS's problem, is I think more severe than Windows 10, but this is a thin veneer of security. What they claim to do is like binary verification and secure enclave and blah, blah, blah. But the reality is that's not what is happening under the hood, which is why you can still run arbitrary code.
It was never meant to be protection. It was meant to keep you from running competitors' software that they don't approve of. And that's all it's ever going to be. So don't count on it.
I would take the slightly less cynical view that this is about driving the adoption of the Windows Store, and Microsoft will use a cudgel to encourage its OEM partners to bundle Windows 10S because that'll be the free one, or that'll be like the home version or something. And so in turn, that will drive adoption of the Windows Store so that the Windows Store can be compatible with or competitive with Microsoft, with Apple's App Store. So that'll be the Microsoft Store with its apps and the Apple Store with its apps. Unfortunately, the Windows Store is a broken and dysfunctional piece of crap, so they would be better off fixing that problem first than trying to force it down everyone's throats.
Yeah, it's and even if it did work, a world where it's just Apple Store and Microsoft Store,
that is a pretty bleak story.
Couldn't get any worse.
Well, let's replace them with robots. Oh wait, that's McDonald's.
I love this story. There's one thing that bothers me about this story. So we're gonna get 2,500 stores with kiosk ordering. So, and they're going to do service to the table. So you're going to go up to the kiosk and you're going to punch in what you want. That's going to give you a ticket. You're going to go to your table and somebody's going to bring it to you, which, hey, that's pretty good. Some people get to keep their job. Instead of working behind the counter, they're going to be carrying stuff out. That's, you know, okay. And the kiosk won't get things wrong. But here's my problem. Think about all the filthy little children pawing at that kiosk all day, and then you have to touch it. They need to give me like a little glove or, you know.
Like the bread glove.
Like the little finger condoms to put on so I can interact with. Now, the other thing they're doing that's even better, 4,000 stores. This is in the U.S. alone, 4,000 McDonald's. Think about that. Like, how many are there?
I don't know. That's.
That's how many per state. That's crazy. So 4,000 McDonald's are going to have mobile drive-through ordering. So again, rather than screw up your order, you're going to just be on your phone like, this is what I want, and then you drive through and you get it.
Nice. Totally hackers will not fake their GPS data and just grief McDonald's all day long. Totally not going to happen.
Well, I don't know exactly how that's going to work. I don't know if it explained it in an article, but like, are they going to use like a QR type thing or... because. You have to pay them still,
yeah.
Or do you think it'll be online payments?
Well, you could probably do online payments. I mean, that's one way to maybe avoid the griefing.
I wonder when we'll have, like, watch this ad and get 20 cents in McDonald's credit or get a free fries at McDonald's. That's going to be a big industry, I bet.
Answer our 20 question quiz about Downey's new products and get a free,
get one French fry per answered question.
It's going to happen. Wall Street was also really happy about this. Apparently, McDonald's stock prices were up a bunch.
Yeah, well, think about it. I mean, they say they're going to keep these employees. They ain't going to keep those employees. Can you think about so if you're going to take 6 orders and prep them and package them and give them to the customer versus take 6 orders, people in the back prepping and packaging, and then one person takes them to each table? Because One person's going to be able to handle that, right?
I would think so, yeah. That's, even a busy McDonald's.
They're not that big. And it's not like, you know, you have to balance the tray. It's all packaged. So, yeah, that's definitely going to cut employees. It's going to be huge for their bottom line.
I think that's going to be it might be an amazing dining experience, though, because I don't like people.
Well, think about, like, you could just, you're at the table, or even if you don't want to use the kiosk, but you can just go in and sit down, pull out your phone. I want this, this, and this. Eat it. You know what? I decided I want a milkshake. Punch it in. Here it comes. It seems great.
I like the idea, though, of it's like I just imagine the little kid with the milkshake just pouring it all over the front of the kiosk. Yeah. And then, like, the next person has to deal with, like, an inch of crust on the touchscreen.
They should do, like, the tearaways, like the race car drivers, where they just come up and just rip it off, like, every hour. That would save money, I bet.
I think that would probably be about the only way to deal with that.
We should market that.
The only other thing that I've seen like that was a public restroom. That was in, I mean, because public restrooms in America, no one knows how to use the restroom. So it's like really, really bad here. I don't know if there was anything that could drive me to really terrible things, it's the state of public restrooms. And this was a public restroom that about every 4 hours or whatever, the door would, like, it was like no one was in there. I guess an operator would come by or something or whatever. They would lock it and the whole thing would just steam clean. There was a drain in the middle of the floor and the whole thing would just pressure wash itself. And it's like, wow, that's amazing.
But that motion sensor only has to fail once for that to never be a thing again.
That is how public restrooms really need to be designed. I mean, that's just, and so it'll be like that for the McDonald's kiosk. It's like, you know, at precisely 3:30 in the afternoon.
Just a hood comes down from the ceiling and seals it off.
Yeah. And it's like, what is it doing? It sounds like it's really terrible. It's like it's being sterilized.
But there'd be like that one impatient person just pounding on it. Give me my Big Mac.
Oh, are you running OpenVPN? Oh, well, if you are, it's time to patch. A researcher found some problems in OpenVPN just by fuzzing.
Fuzzing is another thing that if it doesn't have an entrance on Urban Dictionary, it should have one.
That one's got to be there because furries. Yeah, so what fuzzing is in the context of the OpenVPN thing is a certain security researcher just throws lots of random crap data at OpenVPN, and holy crap, he found a way to remotely execute code on OpenVPN. So if you're using OpenVPN, you need to patch now.
This was actually, so there's like, oh, damn, that was this story. So edit that last part out. I was going to talk about the stack thing.
Oh, yeah. If you are running OpenVPN on pfSense, for example, you need to go and update it like immediately because OpenVPN, I mean, it's a really severe problem.
And almost every VPN service has OpenVPN. A few don't, but so many do that you are probably affected by it.
Also in Linux news this week, there's a new vulnerability called the Stack Clash vulnerability. And so this will enable root level code execution from just an ordinary user. So this is really bad. You need to update your Linux systems. If you haven't rebooted your Linux system or gotten a new kernel that's less than a month old, guess what? It's going to be time to reboot.
This is really impressive because there is a very small part of the memory that watches for that Stack Overflow and throws a page fault. But these guys were able to just jump over that, like throw so much crap at it that you go entirely over that into a whole other part of the memory. And that's how they got around it. So they're saying that for now we need to make that section like a megabyte long, which would cripple performance, but otherwise, you could just jump over it.
That's the workaround until you can reboot your system. So everybody reboot their systems. There go my uptimes again. Sci-Hub. Now, we reported on this. Sci-Hub is one of those websites that hosts scholarly journals that are normally behind like a subscription service. So the deal with this is if you are an academic, you need to get your papers published in a peer-reviewed journal. But in order to do that, you have to pay money. And in order to get the peer-reviewed journal, you also have to pay money. And it's kind of weird because a lot of the time this type of research is taxpayer-funded or it is funded through a public grant or a university grant or something like that. And so all this research is not really going to the public good. It's sort of locked up in these journals. So there are websites like Sci-Hub that will host these journals. And so, yeah, is it strictly speaking against the terms of copyright? Yeah, because the journals make the people that are uploading their papers to the journal, you know, give them copyright control, not exclusive copyright control, but enough copyright so that they can claim protection on their publication. And so Sci-Hub was one of those websites, and one of the journal publication companies sued Sci-Hub. And it's like, hey, you're not allowed to republish our journals. Sci-Hub said this is ridiculous. They did not show up for court or answer any kind of legal summons, and so a $15 million default judgment has been entered against Sci-Hub.
Boo. Which they're not going to pay, and they've said they're not going to change anything about their operations. In fact, when this lawsuit came about, it doubled their user base because people didn't know that existed. And now this judgment has happened. They're going to get way more traffic again. Yeah. It's important to note that this whole peer-reviewed journal thing has become sort of a cottage industry. And once you get established, you'll often sell it off to another company who doesn't care about anything about it except making money. And there are several people who have pointed this out by having algorithms generate nonsense
and
papers. And some, here's $3,000. Here's my paper. Boom. It's in a scientific journal. So it's a very dirty industry. And before you think, well, you know, hey, that's their right. That's their copyright. It's really bad what they're doing to science. And we try to stay away from the, you know, the really incendiary topics, but the whole climate change things, both sides are abusing this to an insane degree. Yeah. Like, you know, I'm not going to go red or blue on this, but they're both cheating by just giving money to these people. It's like, publish this. Look at this published paper. Look, oh my God, it proves your thing is wrong. And that's
there's a lot of that happening in a lot of industries, from everything from hair loss to climate change.
Yeah. So it's getting to the point where we can't trust scientific papers because they are for sale. And this, you know, just kind of points that out.
Mike Judge pointed this out in Idiocracy. It's like, our best scientists were concerned with hair loss and penis enlargement. It's like, here's the scientific journals that where this is going on. This is the front lines. Oh, Lord. So, yeah, but they did lose their domains. I think that their domains were repossessed, and they set it up at, like, a new domain.
Well, they're operating on a Tor onion right now.
It's just so utterly ridiculous. Another FCC news. We should have put this with the other FCC stuff, but FCC has granted OneWeb approval to launch 700 satellites for space internet. Now, this is not going to happen overnight, and this is not the final approval that's needed. This is just the first step.
But they are saying 2018 if they get all the other approvals. Now, they're not the only company that's looking to do this. There's a lot of companies that are looking to do this, but they're just going to put up a big mesh of non-geostationary satellites and try to give the entire world internet.
Now,
you know these governments are going to want to track that, right? Like, who gets to track it if it's the whole world?
For worldwide internet like this, the bandwidth is going to be really severely limited, even with 700 satellites, because you're not going to be able to service a huge number of people from only 700 satellites. But you could probably get, like, if it were servicing a large number of customers, you probably could get, like, 3G speeds, unless the technology gets dramatically way better, or they're going to launch bigger satellites than I expect. I'm expecting them to launch, like, Pico satellites or really tiny satellites in order to lower the cost of deploying something like this from, you know, tens or hundreds of billions of dollars to something that would be, you know, readily accessible. The really big thing with satellite internet, though, and a lot of people don't understand this, is the geosynchronous satellites, the kind that you have, like, with satellite TV, are the worst kind of internet that you can possibly imagine. It is a hell on earth that it's bad. It's really bad. And it's because it's a speed of light problem. It is not going to be solved probably in my lifetime, because the time it takes the signal to go to the satellite and then back down to a ground station, we're talking about something on the order of 500 milliseconds plus. And that's a speed of light problem. We're not even talking about the encoding and decoding overlay, you know, that kind of stuff. Non-geosynchronous satellites are much, much closer to Earth. We're talking about latencies on the order of, you know, 60 to 100 milliseconds potentially. And that is a much more exciting proposition for me than a geosynchronous satellite that provides internet access.
Even then, you're not going to be playing StarCraft. But if you're in a school in the Congo that's never had internet, and all of a sudden, hey, maybe you can, that's not a bad idea. This is really, it's more of a, you know, the people that have never had it get it than, oh, look, it's a fun new thing that I'm going to have on my mobile phone.
Yes, it is promising. And it's honestly probably potentially more reliable than the 4G network that we have here in America. Like, having traveled internationally, the mobile phone network that we have in America is unadulterated trash. It is just, it's 1985 technology compared to the rest of the world, and it is very sad and depressing. And this could actually be better than that.
Which assures us that the American mobile phone companies are lobbying as hard as they can against it.
The Supreme Court has ruled that the government cannot restrict your access to social media. So this comes from, I think, like a sexual offender law. It's like sexual offenders not allowed to use social media. We might have covered this once before or a similar story to this, but the Supreme Court has finally ruled. It's like, no, using social media is a human right, so we can't restrict that.
Yes, there was a sex offender, and he just posted status on Facebook. And so they went and got him. And they're like, sorry, I think his original crime was related to computers somehow, probably child pornography. And we've talked about this so many times that, oh, we got to protect the children. That's the line they use over and over to take away your freedoms. We have to protect the children. And you can't defend the child pornographers. It's a group of people that no one will defend for good reason. But the Supreme Court, in a moment of lucidity, said, no, if you don't want your child interacting with this person, then don't let them use social media. Your child is your problem. Now, they have added a loophole of, like, you cannot contact certain people through social media. So you can post to Twitter, post your Twitter status. If you were to put direct message a child on Twitter, then a parole violation would still, you know, that would come into play. But if you are just using social media in a way that's not directed toward any person, no one can stop you from doing that.
Yeah. The Supreme Court likened it to, you know, the modern version of the public square. And so it's like, you can't, you know, there's not really a lot you can do to restrict that. It doesn't work that way, which is good.
Now, Facebook could. It's totally within their right. If they were to go to law enforcement and say, hey, give us a list and we'll block them, they could do that if they wanted to.
Just private corporation. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. Tesla is in talks to start a streaming service, and they're talking to music labels, I guess, their own streaming service. I don't get this. Are they thinking about running this in the car?
Yeah. It's supposed to be like a media experience in the car that comes with the car. Now, we talked about Venn diagrams. What do you think the Venn diagram looks like of people with smartphones and people who drive Teslas? One circle is entirely within the other one. Who doesn't already have access to music streaming? And I'm sure Tesla has Bluetooth, right? How could it not? That's ridiculous. I don't know why they're doing that.
Yeah, because Elon Musk. Probably Elon Musk is looking at it and it's like, this experience is terrible. We can do something better. It's like, well, maybe.
Though. I've got the Google Play Music, and aside from the whole like copyright crap where certain things are just missing, which you can upload, by the way, it's a fine experience. Works great in the car. I think he wants to party with rock stars or, you know, pop stars. It's like, how can I get in a room with Katy Perry? I know.
I'll start my own streaming service. Yeah. He sounds more and more like a Bond villain every day. speaking of Bond villains, YouTube has claimed that it has 1.5 billion monthly users as it races to boost its video ad business. So this is sort of the continuation of the adpocalypse where there's apparently objectionable material on YouTube, and Google's been selling ad space on that, maybe or maybe not. And so they're saying, well, we've got 1.5 billion active users who would like to advertise with us.
Yeah, and they're saying that average, those people spend an hour watching YouTube. So
that seems unfortunately, like kind of a lot.
Unfortunately, it's not this hour, which it should be. We should have 1.5 billion viewers.
Yeah, you should probably like share this content and interact and stuff. We've been told that you know, some of our subscribers don't even get notices, and I'm not sure why that is. I think the algorithm's probably broken.
Yeah, well, I think they are constantly, you know, Google, that's what they do. Like, they're constantly like trying to beat people who are gaming the system. And of course, we know that a lot of people were gaming the YouTube ad system, and it was pretty easy to do for a while.
Still is.
So we all suffer for that.
Yeah, it's not really that ad revenue has gone down on YouTube before adpocalypse. A lot of people will say ad revenue's gone down. Not really. The ad revenue has gone down because the massive botnets are doing click fraud. Is how they, you know, the criminal syndicates are basically taking all the ad money.
The IP cameras in the refrigerators are
watching a lot of YouTube.
Your refrigerator really loves PewDiePie.
PewDiePie and three or four other Russian channels that are just like random squares and boxes and things, I guess. I don't know. Mark Zuckerberg has announced that he is changing Facebook's mission.
Facebook's new mission, of course, bringing the world together.
Why? Why you do this, Zuckerberg? Why you do this?
He left out the part about bring them together and surveil them.
Was there a Bond villain where it was like, you know, it was plainly obvious to like Bond and crew that they were like an evil mastermind genius, but like to the rest of the world, it was like they were this nice little old lady, or like they were like a nice, it was like, no, he's a humanitarian and he's going to do good stuff. And then as soon as the villain was alone with Bond, it was like, yes, Mr. Bond, your instincts are right. I'm going to kill everything.
Well, that's like half the comic book villains that have ever existed.
Like Lex Luthor. It's kind of like the Lex Luthor archetype.
But you know, I talk to people, and because, you know, we work in technology, a lot of times it's like, oh, what do you do for a living? And what are you into? And it comes back around to technology, and they're like, oh, yeah, that's Zuckerberg. He's a genius, right? And it's like, oh, how do I not claw my eyes out in your presence? So, you know, the normies definitely think the same thing they thought about Steve Jobs. They think that guy is brilliant, and he's changing the world, and he's the best thing that's ever happened to us. It hurts.
It does. It does hurt a bit. Netflix has launched a new interactive show that lets viewers dictate the story. So this is kind of like a Which Way book, but in video form.
Choose your own adventure. It's mostly for kids, and I don't know. It's weird. Like, you think kids would go for that? I don't know how big the story branches are, because it's like, is there a really bad ending, like video games? Can I get the ending where everybody dies? And like in Fallout, I turn evil. I join the, what was the name of the robot people?
I don't remember. The synths, yeah.
Oh, yeah, the synths.
I think it's going to be precisely as big as the interactive DVDs. You guys remember interactive DVDs? Yeah. Like you put the DVD in and like you hit the button and then it does stuff. There were interactive DVD board games, yeah. We didn't have much before the internet.
I remember they had a video game console on VHS. And it was a light gun, and you put the VHS in, and little targets would pop up sometimes, and you would shoot at them, but there was no, it was VHS. Like, the planes never went down. You just shot them, and at the end, it was like, oh, you scored X. And it was like, why does this exist? Who thought this was a good idea?
That thing is a collector's item. You could probably sell on eBay for like 10 grand if you can find it.
I had one, but I threw it away so quickly.
Speaking of technology that's not really technology and or scam, Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop is... wow, what a headline. Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop is a biofrequency healing sticker packets. But in their marketing, they said, hey, we make this thing out of the same carbon material that NASA uses for monitoring people in spacesuits. And then NASA piped up and said,
We don't have that. That doesn't exist.
That's not a thing.
So it's a little bit of fake news. Gwyneth Paltrow herself did not market this, just like she didn't actually do anything. She's famous, and she has a product line that's all this hipster, you know, homeopathic crap. And these people sold her this bag of goods, and she was like, oh, that sounds great. Let's include that. And it was their marketing jargon that was like, oh, this is totally NASA stuff. Well, it doesn't exist. There's no such thing as biofrequency healing. And if you bought it, you're not very smart.
And that's pretty much it for the news, because if you made it this far in the news, probably not very smart either. You've got other things to do.
But thanks for that engagement. We need it. We're desperate for it.
We do have a podcast on the website. There's a podcast link in the footer and an RSS feed. So if YouTube's not doing its job on notices, you can totally subscribe to the RSS feeds for this and various other stuff and get notices. So that's good.
Podcast brought to you by the patrons on Patreon. They pay for that. So
yeah,
thank you, patron.
The patrons definitely make that possible with the technology and the script and the other stuff that we did to do that.
The hosting, because we host that.
Yeah. So thank you. Thank you, patrons. Much appreciated. And that's pretty much it for the news. Yeah, we're expecting some news on X299. We're doing testing on X299 this week and next week. So that's going to be interesting. We've got the 4-core Kaby Lake i5, because I don't know why. And we've got the 10-core whatever, but it's the retail 10-core. So we're gonna get a non-cherry-picked 10-core CPU and see how far we can overclock it. I'm not hopeful about anything past 4.5 gigahertz. Based on everybody else that I've talked to that already have their CPUs. But hey, we're going to give it a try. It's going to be neat. Can't wait to get my hands on Threadripper either. I think Threadripper, it's looking like Threadripper is going to be, it has the potential to be the winner here. But I think Intel is going to win on clocks. So we're going to see.
See you next week.
See ya.